This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Bringing you more of your community. Joy 94.9.
Macca.
Thanks, Tass. Our next guest is Tim Payne from the University of Sydney. Good morning, Tim. How are you?
I'm very well, Macca. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I read your piece in The Conversation around staffing levels for independent MPs. Now, you were previously, in a previous life, you were a staffer for Peter Andren, is that correct?
Yep.
And he was an independent member of, was it the Federal Parliament or the State Parliament? I can't remember.
Yeah, he was a federal member for Clare.
That's right.
From 1996 to 2007.
Look, we had a discussion earlier with Peter Khalil and also with a state opposition member. Both of them are of the view, or the same view as myself, that MPs, all MPs, need better resources to do their job. The independents that had four staff members, four advisors, has been cut back to one. They're arguing, I assume, correct me if I'm wrong, that they need four. In your experience, why do they need more than one? Bearing in mind they have electorate office staff to do most of the electorate work for them. So why do they need more than one?
Well, the main reason that I think they need potentially more than one is that they need to be across every single piece of legislation themselves that comes before the parliament, and to make up their own minds about how they vote and how they engage with that legislation, which can include complex amendments as well, and how to explain that legislation to their constituencies and consult with their electorate. And I guess the reason I wrote the piece was I think what's sort of been missing from the whole debate is the actual looking at the evidence around what it requires for different types of MPs to do their jobs properly on behalf of their constituents.
Would you agree as a general principle, Tim, that, I know the argument that members of parliament that are part of a large party, they have the party organisation, or if they're in government, you know, ability, you know, to get some resource from ministers, etc. But shouldn't the argument be that all MPs should be better resourced? You know, when a party's in opposition, having observed both sides being in opposition, it's a pretty miserable existence, and not having a lot of staff versus when you're in government and particularly you're a minister. Shouldn't the situation be that all MPs have adequate resources?
Yeah, well, it definitely should be. And I think the thing that's, again, missing from this is that these decisions about levels of resourcing seem to be made based on an ad hoc historical arrangement, or, you know, in recent times, some deals that have been done between independents and the former government, without actually looking at what's required. So for any MP, there's really two key aspects of your work, or three, actually. So you have to deal with your constituents, and I think I wrote in my piece that, you know, 20 years ago when I was working with Peter Andren, it wasn't unusual for us to have something like 6,000 constituent inquiries a year, and you have staff in electorate offices that deal with those. But then you have your parliamentary work, which is very different. You know, you're travelling to Canberra for half of the year. You're in Parliament. You're dealing with legislation. You're voting on amendments. And obviously, your resourcing levels increase if there's a balance of power situation, which there has been. And so historically, I think when Tony Windsor and Rob Oakeshott had the balance of power in the House of Representatives, they had two advisors. I think at the moment in the Senate, the independents have
four
more advisors. But, you know, the workload in the Senate when they're in a balance of power situation is very, very extensive. But I think the other thing is here too is who should be making the decision about the resources that MPs get access to. And I don't really think that the government of the day, it really should be a sort of more of an independent decision that's made by the parliament, but also even potentially taking MPs themselves out of the decision making process, so that there's a looking at the resources. And so when I was with Peter Andren, we had one advisor and four electorate staff, but the fourth staff member was allocated because of the large size of Calair being a rural electorate, so you needed to have two electorate officers. My view is that was very challenging to do the job, so the more resources are needed. I was actually surprised myself to hear that it had been increased to four, but I really think that what's needed is a different process for making these decisions, because it's not in the interests of the government of the day to have a well-resourced set of new independents, because the more resources they have, the more they can hold the government to account.
I think one of the questions that comes to my mind, Tim, is in relation to how do you determine what is the right level of resource? And it seems to me that what's occurred historically is that sweetheart deals have been done between government and independents in order to secure their support. And so therefore they've been given four advisors plus four electoral staff. But, you know, how do you determine that? And I would go back to the to basics and say, you know, what is the problem that we're trying to fix here? Macker would argue that the problem that we're trying to fix is that we want better governance. I think that's a fantastic objective and something that we should all be working towards. And my next question would be is, what's the best way to actually achieve that? And what we saw under the previous federal government was a deficit in a whole range of processes, supports and practices. There were codes of conduct that were ignored. There was inadequate support available for staffers in order to get their own, you know, welfare and support that they require in order to be able to do their job. So I would go back to absolute basics and say, what's the problem we're trying to fix and what are the best ways to fixing that? One of the solutions that the federal government's come up with is a better library and a better research function that's available to all MPs, not just a small section. That's a pretty good first step, I would say, and a pretty good initiative. So what do you think about that approach?
Yeah, well, I wrote in my piece that the library is a wonderful resource. My understanding is that since I worked with Peter 20 years ago, or more, that the library has had suffered extensive cuts, and I've not heard any specifics about what's being put back into the library, but that is a resource that independents draw upon. But I think the other point to bear in mind here is that when Peter Andren was in federal parliament, I mean, there was a period when he was the only independent in the whole House of Representatives. Independents are a bit of an anomaly. We've seen a fundamental change, a totally different shift in politics, where we now have, I think, 16 independent members on the crossbench. It's a fundamentally different parliament. And rather than just saying that, by decree that independents should have exactly the same staffing that a party member backbencher does, I think they need to think about how that role is fundamentally different. I think there's also potential for some coordination and on top of that. So the library provides a very specific, quite detailed, goes into a lot of depth. They used to produce these things called Builds Digest, but they don't, and they can provide sort of tailored advice, but it's not sometimes as timely as an MP will need, or provided in the form that is accessible. And I think that every member of parliament needs that in-house capacity to be able to frame and provide the advice in the way that their member who they're serving that works for them.
Yeah.
But another big job in the parliament that's challenging for independents is just to keep up to speed with what's happening in the house with the business and motions and divisions, and when you're in parliament, that actually requires someone in the office keeping a constant eye on it and being able to say, this is what's the division about, this is what you've got to vote on. I think there's potential there for some pooling of resources so that all of the independents get that same advice and they're not needing to duplicate it.
Great. Tim, we're out of time, unfortunately, so we are going to have to move on. Can I thank you for taking some time out this morning to speak with us, reflecting on your own personal experience, but also adding to this debate. It's been very timely and very useful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, much appreciated.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Tim. That was Tim Payne from the University of Sydney. He's a lecturer, I believe, and an ex-staffer for a former federal independent member of parliament of about 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.